This is episode number 17. The only relevant question is whether you will let it be possible for you.
Welcome to the Innovateology podcast, where it is all about unleashing the creative side to find those brilliant, disruptive ideas to validate and build innovative solutions to solve life's problems.
Hello, and welcome to a new year and a new podcast of Innovate Your Life. I'm your host, Mary Michael, and today we're going to be focusing on finding your inner energy. Many people have asked themselves, what do I really want in regards to their lives? This is where our theme of energy comes in. Energy comes from within when we love and enjoy life. So to start out the new year, we found three authors that share unique perspectives on how to find this inner energy. Today, we're going to talk about The Big Leap by Guy Hendrickson. Next week, we're going to share Simplicity by Richard Rohr. And then finally, we're going to talk about The Big Life by Anne Shokat. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome to today's episode of Innovateology, our podcast where we hope to help innovate your life. And today we're going to be talking about a book called The Big Leap. Now, The Big Leap is written by Guy Hendricks. And I think it's actually a really good book of kind of starting in this theme of kind of discovering where you find your inner energy. And what this book hopes to answer is if you've ever felt stuck, it's that genius inside of you kind of calling out. If you've ever wanted to contribute more in your life, you're trying to figure out what that path is. If you've ever enjoyed a state of flow or you've forgotten time passes, that's your genius calling you. So what this book hopes to call out is, what is that genius? So in this podcast, we'll hopefully define what that genius zone looks like. And also, how do I bring that forth so I can serve others and serve myself at the same time? So we'll just jump right into this. So some of the themes that we saw in The Big Leap are this upper limit challenge. So I think it's important that we kind of define what that upper limit challenge is. And part of it is that we're programmed to stay safe and not shine or stand out from the crowd. So maybe Melissa and Linda can jump in here and kind of talk about some different challenges and examples that they've seen with this upper limit challenge that was discussed in this book. I think it's not always easy to describe this because a lot of times, you know, we're just going along our daily life and we don't always think about, hey, what's that fear that we have or why are we afraid to stand out?
Yeah, I did read the book, and from what I understand, the author actually, his own upper limit challenge that he realized was that he didn't think he deserved to go up to another level. You know what I mean? And maybe he was taught that as a child or, but it also, he gave, you know, maybe about eight other examples where it could even be, you know, people have told you that you're not good enough to go into this genius zone that is better than your regular zone. You're, you know, going up to the next level. But I also think, you know, I thought of it myself personally, and I think what holds me back sometimes is a little ADD, like how I get involved in way too many things and then I'm not in my genius zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, that's a great point. But sometimes you wonder, is some of what we do in that way kind of avoidance behaviors, right? That helps us to kind of stay from taking that risk. Because I, in my own example, I had the experience of actually really looking to other people who helped me believe that I could move to another level. So as an example, I hadn't thought that I could have a chance in product management. And there were actually a couple of people in my professional life who helped me along that way and mentored me and believed in me. And I really feel that a lot of times it's with the help of other people that we get to recognize our own inner genius. So it's definitely something that, in my case, I didn't do it by myself.
I have to jump in there. That's a really good analogy. And I think Melissa was going to say the same, but I think it's almost like we have this internal glass ceiling going on within us and we see ourselves through other people's perceptions. And I know that this has happened quite a bit in my life where I know I've had managers in the past that will just say something horrible. Like, you know, you're just too stupid to do that. Or you're just too, you know, you're just not good enough. Just don't even try. And I think our parents do that sometimes too. And we program ourselves to believe that when it's totally not even true. I remember someone saying, well, you're just not good enough to be in sales, or you're just not good enough to go out and sell to a client. And they'd come up with their own rationale in their head. And then it would almost reprogram myself. So when I needed to go out and look for something better, I kept stumbling back to that little voice inside my head. And so it definitely does create that kind of almost like this internal glass ceiling that we have to break against. Mm-hmm. And it paralyzes us. So there's another theme that comes up, which is called outshining. And this is a message that we get from others, such as our family, not to outshine our siblings. And I know, Linda, you came from a big family. And Melissa, I think you have a sibling or two. Mm-hmm. And in Australia, they actually, with a society of basically former prisoners, they had this expression of don't be a poppy. So don't stand out. Don't be that tall person. Don't do anything. Just keep down low. And I think within growing up, we could probably see this with our siblings, where I think a lot of our parents didn't want you to overshine over another sibling because they didn't want to have to deal with whatever behavior consequences of, oh, that person's better than me. I can't do this. So maybe you can give some examples there.
Yeah, I guess I could start with saying it wasn't so much in my experience of like, don't outshine, but it was definitely, we definitely had one of my brothers who definitely shined. So he just seemed like anything he tried, he did really well, whether it was sports or, you know, even when he did a shop class, or when he had, you know, they did craft class, anything he did, he seemed like he did really well. So it wasn't so much like, oh, you know, you're not good enough. It was more like all the attention seemed to get really focused on that particular sibling.
Yeah, I think that's actually the same in my family. And I also think in families, you get known for, you know, they are good at this and they're good at that. So the other person can't be, because that person in the family or sibling occupies that theme or that quality, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that can, you know, and also, you know, in my family, I would say, you know, you don't boast, you don't, you know, we were taught not to promote ourselves in a sense. Mm-hmm. I think that's another issue.
Yeah, so there was a lot more, and possibly just when I was growing up, there was a lot more about, you know, being humble. And I think what I observe now is that kids are really encouraged to say, you know, I do this or I do that. There's not the same emphasis on being humility as there used to be.
So I can relate to this about outshining. So growing up, I was actually encouraged to swim, and my brother was encouraged to do running or cross country. Mm-hmm. Because I was so competitive that I wanted to, outshine him. But my parents didn't want him to feel like, oh, look, she's better than you in one sport. And that's how I interpreted it. But I actually went into triathlon, which was swim, bike, and run. And in the end, like ended up, you know, kind of taking that on. But for the longest time, I didn't think that I could be a runner because I was never really directed to do that. So it was kind of just getting over that belief of, you know, why and kind of why I was taught to be not a runner, but a swimmer. So I think that that's kind of interesting, a theme that was brought up. Mm-hmm. So another theme, go ahead.
Do you think that was a gender issue too? Is that, you know, the male?
I don't know if it was necessarily a gender issue because I ended up running in college and I ran with my dad and I ran in third grade around doing fun run races. I don't think it was so much a gender. I think it was just like, hey, look, we don't want sibling competition rivaling going on. Yeah, exactly. Okay. We don't want that in our household because it will just lead to more tears or somebody will feel hurt that we're going to split you up. You're going to do this and you're going to do that. Okay. And kind of end it right then and there. Why? I'm not sure. But yeah, and I've seen like lots of families that have like their swimmer families. So you see all four kids swimming. And it's kind of cool because they're all hanging out together on the pool deck. Versus for me, I was always kind of like the lone sibling with a whole bunch of other families that were swimming. So with that, I think it's another interesting theme that we saw in the Big Leap was this theme around zones. So we saw four main operating zones, and there's this question of where are you operating now? So there's the zone of incompetence. And this one is you're bogged down doing tasks that you're not so good at, that others can do much better. The solution is to avoid doing them altogether. And then you have the zone of confidence, which you are confident doing these activities, but others can do them equally well. You can delegate and let others do the task and free up your time to do things that are more, that make you more unique. And then there's the zone of excellence. You perform these activities extremely well and make a living, but you're much capable of more. You're quite comfortable and may be tempted to take it easy, but there's only one place that you'll truly thrive, and that's the next zone. So the zone of genius. And this is the zone where you are truly at your genius and it puts you on an ultimate path of living successful and a satisfied life. So I think it's kind of important to look at each of these zones. So the zone of incompetence, and I'm sure Lynn and Melissa could probably think of quite a few examples of where we're probably incompetent. One of them I can tell you is probably in accounting and doing my taxes. Even though, you know, I'm mastered in math, I just don't like sitting down and I don't like calculating out what happened over the year and where I'm going. So I would prefer to hire that one out. How about you, Linda?
Yeah, I guess like the number one thought I had when I thought of an incompetency is when it comes to directions. I am so grateful for GPSs. But like you, I'd say, you know, I have done accounting tasks, but it's definitely not where I get any energy. And I think because I don't get energy, I will find I make mistakes there. Because you don't want to try to be creative in something like accounting.
Yeah, that's so funny because that would be my choice also is accounting. Even though I came from an accounting family where my mother and father were accountants, I got a bad grade in college for accounting. And not only that, you know, I still don't enjoy it. I mean, I read up on investments and I've probably read about 15, you know, the latest books on investments, but I still don't enjoy it. You know, I'm trying to be competent. I'm probably incompetent, but I'm trying to be competent and get over that. But I still don't enjoy it. So.
All right. Well, let's go into that zone of confidence. So you're confident at doing the activities, but others can do them equally as well. So here, this is, I probably have a lot in this zone. I'm just thinking from a marketing standpoint. So SEO and paid search, I could do it. but I think there's probably others out there that could probably do it much better than I can. So how about Melissa? What's your zone of competence? Can you think of a couple activities?
I would say I'm good at organizing, and I'm also good finding that I am really good at caretaking, which I knew that I was, but it's not what, you know, I would choose to do. You know, it's things that I might be good at, but I'm not, you know, they're not my top. Linda?
Yeah, and in competence, I'd say there were lots of things, if I just think of a marketing career, where there were a lot of competencies, because like Melissa, I can be very organized, and I feel good when things are organized and kind of flowing. But then, you know, I definitely, you know, grew to a place where I was happy to allow others to perhaps take on those tasks because they weren't something that I was uniquely qualified for.
So that brings us into the zone of excellence. So the zone of excellence, you perform activities extremely well and you make a great living, but you are capable of much more. You're quite comfortable and may be tempted to take it easy. So with the zone of excellence, I think we all have a similar commonality here where we're all in marketing and marketing in an industry. Right. So that's where I make my living right now is off of my marketing talents. And you know, I like what I do. It definitely is energizing. But, you know, sometimes every day when you walk into that office, you sometimes think, you know, am I missing my talent? Is my true energy here? Or is there a vibe that is somewhere else? And I would like to hear what Melissa and Linda have in their zone of excellence. And I think you guys are actually starting, or gals are starting to go into that zone of genius. So, Melissa, you want to go first and kind of share?
Yeah, I actually am the same. You know, I've worked years and years in marketing and actually love marketing. But there are some parts of it that I liked so much better. Like I loved strategy. I love looking at the big picture rather than doing tactics or creating tactics. And so I love looking at different strategic ways to run a business or, you know, run or sell your product. And I also loved in excellence, I would say, putting together a story. I worked for a lot of vice presidents and I, you know, put together their stories for outside presentation and CEO presentations. So I enjoyed actually, you know, creating a story around where you're going. How about you, Linda?
Well, in my case, I used to always say I really loved working in chaotic environments, and that was one of the reasons I liked marketing, because it seemed like, you know, new problems and challenges surfaced every single day, and you never knew for sure, like, what shape your day was going to take, and I felt I was really good at being able to keep everything on track in the midst of all the chaotic world around me, that I was able to also solve problems quickly, like think fast, solve a problem, move on, keep the ball rolling, as they say. But then the other place that I felt I was really good was in listening to customers, because in our jobs in marketing, we did so much time in market research and listening to customers. And I felt I got really good at hearing what they were saying, kind of teasing out the insights so we could apply it to our business. So I really enjoyed that. And I definitely felt I got into my comfort zone there.
Very interesting, those perspectives. So let's move into the zone of genius. So this is the zone where you're truly at a genius, and it puts you on the ultimate path of living a successful and satisfied life. Another way that they put it is it's where time just seems to disappear and you have no, like, you just enjoy what you do and it just seems to fly by. So for me, the zone of genius where I think time just flies by is when I'm creating something new. And I see this happen in my day job where I'm sitting in a strategy session and time just flies and I don't even see that it goes by. But I also see this when I create a website from scratch, or I create a platform from scratch, or I'm sitting on a call with Linda and Melissa and we're just talking for hours about figuring out what that next strategy is going to look like for 2018. And time just seems to fly away and I could do this for hours. So Linda, how about you? Where does that time just seem to fly away?
I feel like anything that has that kind of creative element to it. So when there's like, I'll take the example from my real world life, you know, so if you had some scientific insight that happened, and all of a sudden we're like, we need to be able to communicate this information. And then there's a bunch of us in the room on a team and everybody's building on each other's, you know, area of strength. And I guess what I liked is when like all these people with all these different talents kind of would be able to kind of come together. And we had this great sense of, you know, after we completed the, let's say, communication, this great sense of, wow, I always felt I could never have done it by myself. And it was just this, and none of us could have done it by ourselves. So it was this great feeling of coming together and making something happen that was a productive product at the end.
I think it's almost like watching a spaceship launch. The amount of work, the time and the effort. I think if you've ever been down to the NASA museum, the Space Museum down in Florida, they actually have this exhibit where you watch what it takes to launch a rocket and the amount of hours and the amount of force. And it's almost like a marketing campaign in many ways, or a launch of a product.
That's a great example.
How many hours like go into it? Because you have the scientists, you have the air traffic control, you have the astronauts, you have all these different pieces of the marketing, and you're choreographing that all together. It's like you have the CEO of the company that's passing down that vision of saying, hey, we need to get down to the speed of getting out to our customers so we can get them that innovative, new product out there. And your job is kind of, even though you're just a cog in that wheel, your job is making sure you're choreographing your team and they're doing, and they're motivated to help get that same mission that you're driving forward, that rocket, you're going to get it out there. And that time that it takes, it's just, you get wrapped up in that energy. And once that rocket launches, it's like, you can't even breathe for a couple seconds. Cause you're just like, wow, we just did something. We just did something spectacular.
And you hit it on the head there, Mary. It's like palpable energy that everybody, it's almost like it was contagious, that everybody's energized by the experience. And I think that sense of being in the flow is just fabulous. And
it's being in that moment, right? Yeah. It's being in that moment of time, but it's also being able on that same wavelength with others that are following in sync. So even though you were that little piece of that rocket, maybe you just made that little cell booster on that rocket ship, that power that took, you know, many millions of cell boosters to get it up into space. You're just that little piece of it, but that little piece is so important to the greater cause. And I think that that's the kind of an interesting point whenever I look at what I do for at a company, is even though I'm a little piece of that puzzle, I helped get that rocket ship up into space. I helped launch that product and being in the moment and speaking that same language with everybody else. And Melissa, how about you?
I would say abstractly that my zone of genius is learning And then taking from, because I am constantly reading like 5 books a week. I'm constantly learning new things. I never just sit and watch TV. My mind's always going. But then taking and creating ideas. But what I did think about is, you know, how I said my zone of excellence was in marketing and strategy and building a story. But I'm starting to do that, and that was for other people, like, you know, the company or, you know, my boss or, you know, the VPs or whatever. And now I'm trying to do that for myself. So I think, you know, and so that's kind of where I want my, I'm not there yet, but where I want my zone of genius to be.
Interesting. So I think we've covered a lot in kind of these themes, and it's a lot to take in. And I know that we'll be looking at other areas, but some action items as we kind of close out is looking at, you know, it's almost questions that you can ask yourself to figure out where you can get into that zone of genius, because I think that's ultimately where we want to be in life, is kind of where is that zone of genius? Where's that energy flowing? And so here's 4 questions. What I most love to do? What is it that I most love to do? What work do I do that doesn't seem like work? In my work, what produces the highest ratio of abundance and satisfaction to the amount of time spent? And what is my unique ability? Now, we'll post those all on the show notes, but start thinking about it. And, you know, even if it's only 1 minute a day that you're just putting towards that, and maybe you can get it up to 10 minutes each day to just start thinking about what energizes you, that's going to be our theme. And you're going to see this over and over and over and again. We're going to be asking kind of like, what is that theme that energizes you? So with that, keep innovating. Don't stop, and keep asking those questions of what you love to do. All right. With that, thanks for listening. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for listening to the Innovateology podcast. We hope we have generated some disruptive ideas and helped unleash that creative side. Please help us keep innovating and leave us a comment or a review on our website. Till next time, don't stop innovating.